If you do, would you join me in Titus chapter 2? Woo-hoo! Titus chapter 2, if you would join me there. Paul's short three-chapter letter to Titus, a pastor that Paul has personally put in place on the island of Crete, because as you've seen, Titus had a tremendous challenge ahead of him. If you're visiting with us, if you've never been here before, or if it's been a while since you've been here, we are walking verse by verse through Paul's letter to Titus. And there's a reason for that. Paul wrote to Titus because the churches on the island of Crete were in significant trouble. There was no leadership. The churches were falling apart. They weren't living for the Lord. They had no testimony in their community. There was no discipleship. Everything was falling to pieces. So Paul left Titus there, and his letter to Titus is sort of his playbook. Titus, I'm writing you this letter, and here are your instructions. And so we saw that in chapter 1, if Titus is going to revitalize the churches there, the first thing that he has to do, the number one thing that a church has to do when it comes to revitalization, is get leaders in place. And that's why in chapter 1, verse 5, Paul says to Titus, Titus, put in order whatever remains. So if you can think, like I told you this before, if you can imagine dropping on the floor a jigsaw puzzle, that's sort of Titus. Titus, pick up whatever pieces you can, put them back together, and in this very same verse he says, Titus, appoint elders in every city, in every church. They need leaders. And then immediately he begins to give the qualifications for leaders, because you can't just put anyone in the role of leader. There have to be certain moral, ethical characteristics of the person's life, and integrity, and how they live for the Lord, and what they do when no one's looking. There are certain things that you have to look for when you put these leaders in place. That was chapter 1. We spent quite a bit of time in chapter 1. In fact, I think it was 7 messages in chapter 1. Because we're in no hurry, we have to make sure we understand the playbook here. Then we got to chapter 2. One of the reasons why a lot of churches fall apart is not because they don't have the right organizational structure. It's not because they don't have the right curriculum. It's not because they don't have nice enough carpet or the right songs or the right instruments. One of the reasons, one of the main reasons why churches are falling apart is because discipleship has gone out the window. There's very little discipleship whatsoever. And it's really an indictment on who we are as a church, Titus chapter 2 is. Because as I mentioned to you a few weeks ago, here's what we do in Western Christianity, in the States. We ask everyone to show up, generally speaking. We ask church people, Christians, to show up on a Sunday morning for corporate gathering. Typically, to make it easier on other people, we'll attach to that corporate gathering some small type of gathering. You might call it Sunday school, life groups, whatever you want to call it. But typically, there's a big group, what we're in right now, and small groups that will either happen before the big group or after the big group. And here's what we do. We ask everybody to come to our big group. And here in our group, we have different ages in the room represented. We have different genders represented. We have different life experiences represented in this room. We have different ambitions. The 20-year-olds in this room have different ambitions than the 80-year-olds in the room right now. Yet we're all in here together. And then we break into, the Western church says, let's break into groups by age or by gender. And so you have the old people in one room, you have the young people in another room, you have your college-age people in one room, you have your young adults and maybe in this room, you have a married class or an older married class or a mid-range. You segregate people, and Titus 2 is saying, that's the dumbest thing you've ever done. That's the dumbest thing a church could ever do. Which is why this chapter, Paul divides the church into 4 types of people. And in some way, you fit in one of those 4 types of people. We started with older men. Then he talked about younger men. No, pardon me. Older men, older women. Today, younger women, and then younger men. At some point in the life of a church, every one of you will be in one of those groups. And God willing, you will transition into other groups, right? And each group has a task. The older saints in the church have a role in the lives of the younger saints, passing on knowledge, discipling them, showing how the gospel is very practical, how to live it out at work and at home. Well, a few weeks ago, we looked at what the responsibility is for the older saints who are ladies, the older women. And today we are going into the text where Paul, to Titus, tells him the role of the younger ladies in the church. So if you're visiting with us today, and it seems odd that we're sort of jumping in on this text, that's why. We're not in any hurry. Now, certainly we could have done all four in one Sunday. It would have been a really long sermon. I'd have gotten contacted about it. And I think we would have overlooked too many of the particulars that are here in this text. I'm pleading with you to consider your role in what we're going to look at today. Because although we are talking to a select group of people, younger ladies, every one of you are impacted by how the young women in our church live for the Lord. You're all impacted by it. First of all, before you even read our text, let's remember how Paul wants us to view these age categories. Because in our culture, the word young is thrown around. The word old is thrown around. Senior adult. The retirement age is increasingly creeping upward, right? For example, I'm 35, and I think that right now, projected, my retirement age is like 69, you know? 70 maybe. My brother, a few years younger than me, his will be different. So we throw these arbitrary names around and sort of they don't stick or we don't know exactly what they mean. And Paul's terminology is almost vague too. So hear me say this. What is older and younger? If you'll remember, we can look at certain texts where these same words are used and we can conclude this. When Paul uses the word older and when he uses the word younger, it's usually based around childbearing. So, if you are a woman in this room who is in your childbearing years, you're having children, you're raising young children, or if you are pretty much under the age of 60, that's a rough estimate, then this will apply to you. Some of you are rejoicing. You never knew you would be considered young in your mid-50s. But you are. You are. Some of you are like, oh, I missed it. Generally speaking, women can have children, childbearing years, depending on culture, right? Depending on the status of health, depending on the status of health care. Women can have children in increasing ages. And you can have a child in your late 30s and be raising children for 15 years, 20 years. So typically, most scholars would say, what we're going to look at today are roughly for those of you ladies who are 60 and younger, most certainly for those of you who have children in your home or who could have children in your home. So if that applies to you, then you need to listen up this morning. And if it doesn't, you need to listen up as well. So let's read beginning in verse 3 so we can remember the context. Older women likewise are to be reverent in behavior, not slanderers or slaves to much wine. They are to teach what is good, and here we go, and so train the young women to love their husbands and children. Can we get back on my soapbox a minute ago? How in the world have we in the Western church provided ways for older women to train younger women when we don't let you have anything to do with each other when you come to church? We put you in different rooms. Somehow we've missed the boat on how discipleship should take place in the context of a church where older women are investing in the lives of younger women. I'll get back off my soapbox and I'll keep reading, okay? So train the young women to love their husbands and children, to be self-controlled, pure, working at home, kind and submissive to their own husbands, that the word of God may not be reviled. We'll make a few statements this morning, and obviously you heard me just read something that's controversial. We'll have to uncover that a little bit. But let's see if we can understand our text this morning. First of all, I'm just going to simply say it. Women must disciple women. Women must disciple women. I am not suggesting to you, ladies, that you can't learn from men. I'm not suggesting that at all. I'm not suggesting, ladies, that you should never participate in a study, Bible study, small group that has male leadership. That's not what I'm talking about at all. I'm not saying, ladies, that you should never call a gentleman on the phone that you consider to be a mature, godly Christian who could give you wisdom. That's not what we're saying at all. What we are saying is that, ladies, you must pour your lives into other ladies. You have to. Not only is it the design of the Bible, it just makes sense. There are some things, ladies, you will feel much more comfortable talking about with other women. There are some of your challenges and concerns that you would be more apt to be transparent about with an older woman or even a woman your own age than you would a man. Older women in the church must disciple younger women. There must be, in the life of a church, this pattern where before the older ladies get to the age where they don't have the mental capacity or before the Lord takes them home, they must take what they've learned through doctrine and through life experiences and pour that into the future generations. And I said this a few weeks ago, and I'll say it again. One of the reasons why a lot of churches are so top-heavy with senior adults and very few younger adults or middle-aged is because the older saints have reneged on this responsibility to pour into the future generations. They're sitting on their hands. They're saying, I've done my work. I'm done with it. Where are the young people? They're in other churches where people are pouring into their lives. Or they're just not going to church at all. We must create, we must have, we must seek, pray for a culture where our older ladies consider it a responsibility not to leave this world without leaving in this world, in the lives of younger ladies, what those younger ladies need to navigate the challenges of life. You think about it, ladies, those of you who fit in the older category today. You think just for a moment, don't check out on me too long, but you think about all of your life experiences. Think about the ups and downs. Think about the bad news you've had at the doctor before. Think about the challenges you've had your way. Think about what it's like to raise children who are disobedient, who don't mind, who are doing poorly in school, who get bullied and picked on. Think about what it's like to have marital issues, to have a husband that won't listen, or to have a stubborn will. All of you ladies have had those types of experiences in your life to some degree or another. And you have all of this, it's almost like a banker with all this money and there's all these people that need it. Don't be stingy with what you have. Ladies, I'm pleading with you. Based on God's word, you must be discipling other ladies. And if you're not, I will go so far as to say you are sinning against the Lord. You're not being and doing what God clearly wants you to do, investing in the lives of the other. Lone Ranger Christianity is insanity. It's insanity. You will drop out quickly. You will burn out quickly. You are toast. Lone Ranger Christianity, it just doesn't work. Never does it work in this. You cannot read Titus 2 and come away with this conclusion. I'm just going to chill out till the Lord takes me home. I'm going to go to church and leave. It's not what's going on here. So number one this morning, women must disciple women. By the way, if you hadn't been here, I said the same thing to the men a few weeks ago. So don't think I'm picking on somebody. I said the very same thing to them. And the reason I know they got it is because a few of them came up to me afterwards and said, you sort of punched me in the gut this morning. Number two, we need to get through these statements here. We need to understand what Paul is calling through Titus, their pastor. What is he wanting the young women to look like? Hey, listen, folks, just go to the Shop and Save this afternoon or sometime this week, whenever you go, and just walk over to the magazine aisle. You don't have to pick up a single one of them. And just walk by and look at the tiers of magazines. And look at the images on the front cover of those magazines of what we think the modern American young woman should look like. Listen to the places she should go. the morality she should have. What we're about to see here would never make it on the cover of one of those magazines. This is countercultural. So when we read this, we might think, oh, Paul's okay with that. Okay? We know that we are trying to establish something here that is countercultural in godliness. So, number two this morning, let's see if we can try to understand these statements. Women, younger ladies, we must pursue godliness by having a determined love. Here's what I mean by that. I want to unpack that a little bit. By having a determined love. He says here, so train, young ladies, or older ladies, you are to train the young women to love their husbands. Train them to do this. Now, if you look at the verses we read just a moment ago, the husband part of the relationship are the bookends of dealing with young ladies. What do you mean, Pastor? When he starts talking about young ladies, he begins with their husbands and he ends with their husbands. Don't miss that. When he leaves older ladies and starts talking about young ladies, he starts with husband and ends with husband. Love your husband, submit to your husband, and everything in between there are practical ways of living your life as a godly woman. So we can't overlook this, ladies, that one of your greatest challenges, if you're married this morning, if you ever intend to be married this morning, and you're in this group, one of your greatest challenges is the person you're going to live with, or you are living with, your husband. The picture here is of how a godly woman can live in relationship with the person that we presume God gave them as a husband. Now, there is a picture here, and this also might not be what you think should be, but it is. There is a picture here of order. There is a reason why Paul does not say, older women, train younger women to love their children and then their husbands. There is a reason why order is here. There's a reason why he begins with husband and then gets to children. You can go to Genesis 2, verse 18. You can go to 1 Corinthians. That a woman's love for her children shall flow out of her love for her husband. She's pouring love into her husband. We're assuming now she's married. A lady in the room might be raising a child and there might not be a husband in the home. Don't check out on me. Still listen. But she's pouring her love into her husband. And overflowing out of her love for her husband is a culture in the home where the children are being loved. He's not just some guy in the room. Okay? He's not just some guy in the house, and I love my children. No, God has created a covenant with man and wife where the love will go down to the children. So I'm just reminding you that there is flowing out of this an order that you see here. Now, Titus says, Paul says through Titus, that the older women are to train. Don't you think that word is there for a reason? Why would he use such a word, train? We train for things. We train for marathons. Are running marathons natural? I don't know about you, but for this fella right here, there's nothing natural about a marathon. Okay? Running marathon, you have something you have to train for. You want to compete in the Olympics? You're going to have to do a lot of training for that. You want to win the U.S. Open next weekend in Washington State? You're going to have to do a lot of training on your golf game. It's not natural. It's something you will have to put work into. Why is that? Because women, some men are very hard to love. They are. Some men are difficult to love. Some children, we'll see in a minute, are difficult to love. Godly older women ought to be teaching, training younger women to love their husbands. Again, some men at different times, all men to some degree or another are difficult to love. Some men work hard all day, they come home, they give their wife 5 minutes of their time and they check out. Whether it's a video game or a television show or a movie or a computer garbage or something, that they're out. They may be in the building, but they're not present. Those men are hard to love. Some men don't have any influence in the home. They just sort of, I make the check and they do their own thing. Some men are hard to love. There is a reason why Paul is saying through the pastor Titus, hey, older ladies, you're going to actually have to train, help them figure out a way to love their husbands. In my own life, I can tell you that there have been times in my own marriage, being married 13 years this year, at the end of this year, there have been times where Christy needed Olympic trainers to help her love me. I wasn't easy to love. And just think of how valuable, older ladies, how valuable it could be to the younger women if they knew they had you in their corner, helping them navigate. Because our culture says, if he's difficult to deal with, check out. Go get a new one. Find the next guy who'll be the love of your life. That you'll live happily ever after so long as that feels good to you. And then go find another one. That's not the picture here. The picture here is of a woman who knows the challenge of marriage, who knows she can't do it by herself, and is leaning on the influence of godly older women who've been doing it even longer. How, ladies, can we resist this discipleship in our culture when marriage is almost a joke? Secondly, he says here, and by the way, I say great determination because when I read this text, every time I preach a text, I try to read it to myself 15, 20 times, just over and over and over again. Sort of let it soak in me. Where almost just sort of, my mind just doesn't have any trouble grabbing it. And when I read this text over and over and over again, I just get the sense that this has to be a woman who is determined to love her husband. That's why he begins this way. And it has to be determination on the older lady to invest in the younger one. Secondly, I just call it gospel-focused parenting. Gospel-focused parenting. I have the privilege every once in a while to officiate weddings. I call it a privilege because weddings are beautiful things. It really is not only the pomp and circumstance, right, of a bride. Megan and John are sitting here. Last September they got married. Megan was beautiful. John was, you know how John is. She was beautiful. It's a nice service. Wonder, I love being able to see, you know, I'm right there, you know, I get to see it all. And it's really cool. The tears, the beautiful thing that goes on. But I have to remind couples before we ever do that, especially the men, you don't know what your future wife's uterus looks like. She may never be able to give you children, and that's okay. She may never be able to bear you children, and she has no control over that. And so anytime, because of my own experience with infertility with my wife and what we went through, anytime that any parenting thing sort of comes up like this, I am sensitive because there might be people in the room who would take a child almost right now if the Lord would just do it. They want children. But I'm not here to put shame on anyone. If the Lord doesn't bring children in your life, that's just His will. It doesn't make you any less of a person. So I'd say that just before you even get into this. That those of you ladies who do find yourselves getting married, and God does give you children, what should your main role be in their life? Loving their daddy. Loving their daddy. And out of loving their daddy, you're creating a picture here that they're about to see some gospel fruit. Here's what I mean by that. I say gospel-focused parenting because of the example of Timothy. First of all, let's see where he says it. So train the young women to love their husbands and children. All of you know that I have 3 children. I know when I was a child, I made it difficult for my grandparents to love me at times. And there is a reason why he's using the word train again and not teach. He's using the word train in that takes practice, takes struggle, it takes determination, commitment. Older ladies can teach the younger wives, whoever fits in that category, how to love their children. And we want our ladies here to create a gospel-centered culture in their home. So if you have Titus open right now, go to the left just a few pages to 2 Timothy. That would be the book right before this one, 2 Timothy. So some of your Bibles, it might just be a page. So go over to your left, 2 Timothy chapter 1. 2 Timothy chapter 1. And let's see, this is Paul again talking to a young pastor. And Paul reminds Timothy of something. And let's read about it in 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 5. I am reminded, Paul says, of your sincere faith, a faith that dwelt first in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, and now I am sure dwells in you as well. For this reason, I remind you to fan into flame the gift of God. Timothy, the faith that you have in your life didn't come from nowhere. Your mama loved Jesus. Your grandmother loved Jesus. They established a culture in our family or in your family of people who love Jesus. Young ladies, yes, you better love your husband. And the way you can be trained to love your children is to train your children to love Jesus, to create a culture in your home where Jesus is honored, is precious, and someone we can sing about at night in family songs, someone we can learn about through devotion, someone that we teach our children about in story time. Jesus should not be for your children something they hear about on Sunday. Jesus should be somebody in your home that is talked about, prayed about, loved, learned about, training our children to grow up and do what Lois did. Lois poured into her daughter, who poured into her daughter, and everybody knew about it. They trained themselves with a gospel-focused type parenting. Hey, older ladies, some of you have testimonies and experiences where you've done this very thing. You have poured into your children a love for Jesus. Don't you see how you could be helpful to the women in our church who are raising young children or who will raise young children? Thirdly, this morning, you must have guarded walls. You must have guarded walls. Love your children, yes. Next, discipline yourself. He says to train and love their husbands and children, to be self-controlled. Now, if you've been here these weeks as we've been looking through this, this should not shock you because I've already told you that there is one thing that Paul says to every group, older men, younger men, older women, younger women, and it's this issue of self-control. In fact, if you want to kind of cheat on me right now, look down at the very next thing. When he starts to talk about younger men, the very first thing he says to them is to be self-controlled. Why do older men struggle with self-control? Why do older women struggle with self-control? Why do younger men and younger women struggle with self-control? Paul is not unaware of our challenges. He knows we need discipline in our life. And so the picture that Paul is painting for you ladies who are raising children or in this younger lady realm of people is that you must, if you will, fortify, put walls of protection around you and your family because the enemy wants to tear them down. Let me give you a picture to sort of prove that. In Proverbs chapter 25, verse 28, it says this. A man, and I'm going to insert woman, so a woman without self-control, is like a city whose walls are broken down. Do you have that picture? No self-control. The army has invaded, torn down the walls, plundered your goods, and the only thing is left is destruction. That's the picture. So what Paul wants the older ladies to do is to invest in the younger ladies so that they will be wise to build up walls around their marriage, their children, their home, so the enemy can't get in. There has to be self-control, discipline, so that the enemy knows, I have to go somewhere else. These people are protecting themselves. It doesn't mean he'll quit, but you're not giving him an easy way into your life. That's the, again, hear this text again, Proverbs 25, 28. A woman without self-control is like a city whose walls are broken down. If your home life, younger ladies, is a wreck right now, maybe, just maybe, the reason why the walls are down, there's no security, it's a mess, it's because there was no self-control. There was no discipline in your family's life to love your husband, to love your children, and to protect the place from all that Satan is doing. Again, I just, hear me say this. This does not come from me. James Dobson, lots of other people have said this. Satan's number one strategy for attacking the Lord Jesus is by attacking your home. If he can crumble that, he is doing his job effectively. So we need to be disciplined. We need to, ladies, have some self-control. I need to hurry up, so I'm going to move on. Next, there should be what I call vertical and horizontal faithfulness. Vertical and horizontal faithfulness. Why in the world are you saying that? This is what he says. He says to be self-controlled, pure. It's that little word, pure, is a massive word. It's not an insignificant thing that he put it there. He's mainly talking about sexual intimacy and sexual faithfulness among women, both mentally and physically. Ladies must, and think of the progression here, love your husband, love your wife. He's going to talk about discipline and self-control, and then immediately talk about your sex life and the purity with which you are innocent before your husband. Because if you are building walls of protection, ladies, you will not let your mind or your body be robbed by the Lord and therefore robbed from your husband with regard to your purity. Older ladies in our church could perhaps invest some time in the younger ladies to talk about mistakes they've made in their purity. Or could perhaps talk about things that they've done to protect the purity of their home so that younger ladies won't make mistakes. Purity has to be guarded and protected. The picture here is faithfulness in regard to purity. Not faithfulness so much in keeping the checkbook, although that's important. Not so much faithfulness in making good meals every night, although that's a great thing. Not so much faithfulness in making sure the home has good entertainment, although that's fun. Not faithfulness in making sure the laundry's done. We all need clean clothes. All those are good things. When Paul wants to talk about a woman's faithfulness, he automatically goes to her purity before the Lord and before her husband. There's a lot wrapped up in that one little word and its connotations throughout the New Testament. It is used explicitly for that cause. And by the way, I'm just now recalling something in my mind that I failed to mention back on the love part. I find this interesting. And it's just sort of a side. I don't think this is minor. All of you know, if you've read C.S. Lewis, that there are different words in the Greek language for love, right? We know that there's the Greek word eros for love. We get the word erotic from it. We understand there's that type of love between a husband and wife where there will be sexual intimacy. We understand that. We got that, right? It's interesting. That's not the word Paul uses here. That's assumed. It is assumed that in the marriage, that's going to take place. The word he uses for love, for wives, love your husbands, be trained to love your husbands, and be trained to love your children, is the word phileo. I tell couples this when I'm going to perform their wedding. In premarital counseling, I say this to them. I hope I do. I try to. I say this. The thing you will do more than any other thing in your marriage, more than sexual intimacy, more than anything, the thing you will do more than anything is just be together. You'll be in each other's presence at a movie, watching the news, at the dinner table, brushing your teeth, driving to church. You will just hang out and be together. That is sort of the phileo love, this personal, deeper than a friendly love, although it is sort of in that connotation of friendship, of getting along with. Boy, that really makes a lot of sense to me. That Paul doesn't go erotic. That's there. That's a given. But I will say this, and I don't mind saying it. If the phileo love is extravagant in your home, all the erotic love will be there. It's going to come. But men, let me say this. If you try to go erotic to get to phileo love, you're toast. You're toast. It's not how you get there. Phileo love, friendship, bonding, intimacy, relationships, personal time with one another, investing in each other's lives, being present with one another, being with one another, caring for one another, doing little things, serving one another, submitting to one another, those things lead to the erotic love. The love Paul is talking about for the younger women to be trained in is how to live life with people. So I just reminded myself about that one. Yeah. I need to move on. The next one would be managing and caring for your home. Now, when I read this text, some of you thought, uh-oh, because this is a controversial one, isn't it? Let's just be honest. What's so controversial about this text, Justin? Well, remember what he said in this text. He says, back over to Titus chapter 2, regarding the women, he says that they should be self-controlled, pure, working at home. That's my translation, working at home. But regardless of what your translation is, it's going to convey something like that. Pastor, how do we understand what seems to be here a methodology where ladies, particularly these in the younger crowd, are not to be involved in commerce or work outside of the home? Is that what Paul is saying here? What is going on in this text here? Well, over in 1 Timothy chapter 5, you don't have to turn there, but over in 1 Timothy chapter 5, it says that women are to manage their households. That's 1 Timothy 5, verse 14. The language is basically, ladies, you have been given a task that the management of the home belongs to you. You are the go-to person over the day-to-day activities of the home. That's your realm. That's where you live and breathe. That's where you're the expert. That's where you're the person there. To create a home that honors the Lord and cultivates children, if they're in the home, where they will love the Lord, ladies must first make their home their priority. I do not think, and I'll try to prove it in a moment, that this necessarily excludes a woman from, or mother especially, from being involved in any type of workplace. Although it could. It could. There may be some of you ladies, and just the very nature of your home life could be to say to your husband, I am not a good wife to you. I'm not a good mother to our children. I'm not disciplined. I'm not managing our household if I'm working. We need to pray and ask the Lord to show us a way where I can be home so that I can be a better wife, be a better mother, be more disciplined, be more self-controlled, and manage this household better. Now, the reason why I say it that way is because of Proverbs 31. I do want you to turn there. Would you join me in Proverbs chapter 31? Now, if you've not ever read Proverbs 31 before, you know, or you may not know this, but this is usually the go-to text that we want to go to look at what the most godliest woman would look like. Ladies, you want to be godly? Proverbs 31 ought to sort of be your pattern of going out, your ambition. I want to be like that woman. Now, let's read Proverbs 31. You can go read it later for other reasons. Here's what we want to do, guys. We want to read Proverbs 31 asking ourselves this question. Is this woman doing anything outside of her home? If we can answer that question, it'll help us understand Titus 2. That's the question we're asking. Is this woman that the Bible is upholding doing anything outside of her home? Let's read Proverbs 31, beginning in verse 10. An excellent wife, who can find? She is far more precious than jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not harm. By the way, you did notice that he starts here with her husband, right? Isn't that where Titus started with? Yeah. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him no harm, or she does him good and not harm all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax, works with willing hands. She is like the ships of the merchant. She brings her food from afar. That's the Bible's way of saying she goes to the grocery store. She rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household and portions for her maidens. She considers a field and buys it. With the fruit of her hands, she plants a vineyard. She dresses herself with strength, makes her arms strong. She perceives that her merchandise is profitable. That's a big statement, isn't it? Her lamp does not go out at night. She puts her hands to the distaff and her hands to hold the spindle. She opens her hand to the poor, reaches out her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of snow for her household. Even a southerner doesn't have to be afraid of snow for her household. For all her household are clothed in scarlet. She makes bed coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. Now listen to this next one. She makes linen garments and sells them. She delivers sashes to the merchant. Strength and dignity are her clothing. She laughs at the time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. What a statement, ladies. You ought to really hone in on that one, ladies. She does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also. He praises her. Many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceitful. Beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands and let her works praise her in the gates. Young ladies, if you have children in your home, you just read from Proverbs 31 about a woman who had children in her home. She loved her husband. She honored her husband. Her love and honor for him was known from people who didn't live in her house. That's why it used the word at the gates. So in the city. She shopped. She was involved in some type of business because she's actually making things and selling them. She's known by others, so she has relationships outside of her home. But the main emphasis, I think you'll agree with me on this, the main strength of Proverbs 31 is that she loves the Lord and there is an order to her life. Husband, children, home, business. I'm not suggesting to you, ladies, that you shouldn't work. I'm suggesting to you that ought to be the least of your priorities. If you do. If you're married and if you have children, if you fit in this paradigm. I know I have some young single ladies here. They're not married and they don't have children. Work, 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 and tithe. Tithe, please, tithe. I'm not here to shame you. I'm not here to put on you any sort of legalistic thing that the Bible's not putting on you. But there's very clearly here a pattern of importance. There's very clearly here an object of what we're really to be after as ladies. You have your children for such short amount of time. You have this situation in your life. Work hard, ladies. Work hard in the workforce if that's where God has you. Work harder at home. Work harder at home to love your husband and your children and to create a gospel-centered culture there in your home, where it doesn't matter where you're in or out, the Lord is pleased and blessed with all that's going on there. Wow. I have to hurry on. The next is to serve with kindness in this text. Boy, Paul really does lay it on the young ladies here. I mean, he has a lot of things for her. But I would just simply say that she ought to next serve with kindness. Pursue godliness by serving with kindness. I take that out of this word, kindness, in my text, and it simply means, listen carefully, a desired goodness, okay? A desired goodness. So back in Titus chapter 2, he says to the ladies to be self-controlled, pure, working at home, kind. That word means a little bit more than helping somebody pick something they drop. That means more than that. It means something more intentional. That there is a desire, a genuine desire, to be good to someone else. It is part of the makeup of that person to have a disposition to do good toward others. Did you hear in Proverbs 31 how that woman helped the poor? That's the idea behind this. That she knows the poor and helps them. She's not only serving her husband, loving her husband, yes, and he's praising her. She's not only loving and mothering and working hard for her children, yes, and they praise her. She's not only managing her household where it functions properly and well in a God-honoring way, yes. She is also has a deep concern in her heart for those who may not have what they need. There is a genuine, desirable quality in her life to help out others. That's what's going on here. And older ladies, this is where you could really shine in the life of a younger person. Hey, come and go with me to the nursing home. There are some ladies that would love to see us today. That would be awesome. Hey, come and go with me. I try to do this once or twice a year. I want to go help this lady do it. That's the type to create within a woman, a young lady, a desire, to have a desired goodness for other people. And then finally, I'm going to say it this way, fulfilling your responsibility as you're in your role in your marriage, if you're married. Fulfilling your responsibility in your role, the last one. And it just simply gets in regard to the submission thing, right? Another thing that we have to talk about in premarital counseling is what submission does not mean. I spend more time on what it doesn't mean than actually what it does mean. We all know that in business and life and on teams, in various places in life and leisure, you have roles, right? If you go buy a Major League Baseball team tomorrow, as an owner, you will have a role in the organization, right? You'll have to hire people and fire people. You'll have to watch the bottom line. You're going to have to hire the right people who will do things and do things that you don't know how to do. We all understand roles. If you adopt a child tomorrow and you don't have any children, you decide to adopt one, all of a sudden your roles change. If your parent has lost the ability to care for himself or herself, your role changes. In marriage and in the home, husbands and wives have different roles. Both are equal before the Lord. Equal. Absolutely equal in status. Yet they have different responsibilities in the home. And Paul's word here is he wants the older women to teach the younger women that in the home life, younger ladies, if you're married, you need to submit to your husbands. You need to follow his leadership as you seek to manage the household. And your management of the household is underneath his spiritual authority. His spiritual authority and leadership, your management of the household coupled together, pursuing godliness, honors the Lord. It's not easy. It's not easy peasy. It's a challenge of keeping yourself in the role that God has given for you. Contrary to a lot of popular misconceptions, and contrary to a lot of the garbage that the church has taught over the years, there is no inferiority in submission, ladies. It is not putting you in second place. It's helping you understand your role as a daughter of the King. And in the home with a husband who loves the Lord, how the two of you are to love one another and pursue the Lord. If a husband asks his wife to do something that is unbiblical, illegal, immoral, or unethical, she no longer follows his leadership, period. I'll say it again. If a husband, old, young, or anything in between, asked his wife to do anything illegal, unbiblical, immoral, or unethical, she no longer is submitting to his leadership because he's no longer leading. He's defected. But so long as he leads her to the Lord, she follows willingly and joyfully, I would add. Young ladies, I don't even pretend that these things are easy. I don't. And yes, we could have sugarcoated all of this and done all four of these types of people in one sermon. But what advantage would that have been for us? I'm pleading with you, young ladies. I'm pleading with you to have a determined love for your husband. Have a determined love. It's not always easy loving us guys. I know that. Men, make yourself easier to love. Secondly, younger ladies, create to the best of your ability a gospel-focused home. Jesus is not just a Sunday thing. We honor him throughout the week. We read the Bible together as a family. We read a Bible storybook about him. We sing a song. We do something in our home, create a culture in our home where Jesus is precious. Thirdly, young ladies, guarded walls. Ladies, guard, build up walls of protection. Have the internet software you need to protect the garbage that could come into your home. Make sure you know what's being watched in your home. Make sure you know where the money's. You have a managerial role in your house to make sure the walls are built. Remember Proverbs, when there's no self-control, the walls are torn down, the enemy comes in and he plunders and he leaves and there's nothing but destruction. Fourth, ladies, there must be a vertical and horizontal faithfulness. It's in that word pure. All wrapped up into that, at least horizontally, is sexual purity. And purity before the Lord is that you're living a life that is transparent before the Lord. Fifthly, you manage and care for your home. You have the general manager job title in your home, ladies. It's a big task. Big one. Six, serve with kindness. Seven, fulfilling your role as a submissive wife. Now, hear me, young ladies. Some of you aren't married and you don't have children. Pastor, how does this apply to me? You might one day be married and you might one day have children. You pray that God will help you become this type of woman if the Lord brings a husband in your life. But you know what, young ladies, if you never get married and never have children, the church could use a whole lot of single ladies who are pure, who are guarded, who love people genuinely who are in their life, who care deeply for others, who understand their role in the church and being a servant and leading in different ways. All of these things apply to you. And you older ladies, our younger ladies, their ability to do a lot of these things rest in your lap. I get that from Paul, who tells Timothy, or Paul tells Titus, to teach the older women to train the younger women. May God create a culture in our church where this is taking place, a discipleship culture. One of the reasons why St. John has struggled in the last 6-8 years is because discipleship has been a second-rate issue. A second-rate issue. We have to create a culture where it's a first-rate priority and use the Bible's method of doing it. And in turn, you know what we're going to have? We're going to have Titus 3 happening. You know what happens in Titus 3? Their culture and their community are being engaged by the people that Titus 2 is creating. Who'd have thought it? Who'd have thought that people in the Bible are learning about the Lord and investing in each other's lives and leaving church and being known in their society? Wow. I'm so looking forward to how this little letter here can revitalize our church if we are obedient. Would you pray with me? God, I thank you for your word, and God, I thank you that there's no question, God, that these are challenging statements. God, I hope and I pray right now that there is not a single woman in this room that feels shame. I am not here to beat anybody up. In fact, Father, I would just tell every woman in this room right now to look to Jesus, because they cannot do any of these things on their own. Not a one. But Lord, you can empower them to be the type of women you've called them to be. God, I pray that the older saints in our church, God, I pray you would break them Help them not be stubborn. Help them embrace the high calling of investing their life experiences, their relationship with you, in the lives of younger ladies. Our younger ladies are starving for the fruit that could come out of those relationships. God, help our younger women be receptive to the wisdom from older godly women. God, help us create a discipleship culture here. And God, next week when we look at younger men, may we create a culture where we're creating godly men. They're just being discipled and grown up here to live and be the godly men you've called them to be, because older men are investing in their lives. God, Lone Ranger Christianity is not your ideal. It's not your plan. We are to be intimately, keenly involved in each other's lives. Relationships matter, God, and they center around your gospel. So God, we pray that you would apply your gospel truth to us this morning. God, I pray if anyone is here today without Christ, that you would convict them of sin, you would bring them to a knowledge of their need for Jesus. God, you would awaken them to believe the gospel, repent of any sin that you bring before their eyes, and they would come to you. God, you beckon us to come to you. God, I pray that the heavens would open up and your Spirit would come down now and convict us and mold us and make us into the people you've called us to be. So God, we pray for your strength and encouragement today. God, do great work at St. John in and through your people as we seek to be Titus 2 men and women. In Jesus' name I pray, amen. May I ask you to stand. We're gonna